Welcome to the Teachers Unify podcast. I'm Sarah Lerner. This episode features Serena Arokium, a survivor from the Sandy Hook school shooting in 2012. She talks about her experience, what it's like being a college student, and her plans for the future. We are joined by Serena Arokium, who is a survivor from Sandy Hook School from 2012 and is now a college student, an adult. So I would like to welcome you to the show.
Hello, everyone.
Before we started recording, I told my kids that I was recording with you, and my son is 18. He's a senior. My daughter is almost 15. She's a freshman. And my son just kind of stopped in his tracks for a minute. He's like, so she's my age? I'm like, no, she's a year older than you, I think. But like, just processing all of that, like knowing what I went through, there are his peers who've gone through something. Just he like was having trouble wrapping his brain around that. If it's okay with you, we're going to jump right in to that day in December. As much as you are comfortable sharing, I would love for you to share your story.
At the time of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, I was only 7 years old, and it was December 14th, 2012, and I was in my little town of Sandy Hook, Connecticut, when this was all occurring, and I remember it was a little bit cold that day, and I was so ready to get to school and hop on the bus, and I remember kissing my parents goodbye and saying bye to my sister as well. I remember getting to school, and we're preparing for the winter break and Christmas, and so we were cutting out snowflakes, making gingerbread houses. Each classroom was doing like their little own thing, but my second grade teacher, Mrs. Clements, we decided to cut out snowflakes and make gingerbread houses and just do little fun activities here and there. A couple minutes later, we heard what it sounded like lunch pans dropping because we were pretty much across from like the cafeteria area, and they continued and we knew something wasn't right. I didn't really know what bullets sounded like as a seven-year-old. Mrs. Clements, I remember she locked the door immediately. She put a black piece of paper over the window. And to even lock the door, she had to step outside of the classroom. And that's where she found two students out in the hallway, and she pulled them inside to our classroom. And she made all of us huddle by our cubbies and sit there and stay quiet. We're all scared because we're seven and we didn't really know what was going on and what was happening outside of the hallway. It just felt like it was happening for ages, and it just kept going and going. It sounded like there was also people on the roof and a lot of people in the hallway. She wasn't really sure what was going on, and she called 911, I remember. It sounded like they didn't pick up a couple of times because everybody was calling. I felt very distraught on like what was going on and what was happening, and like I couldn't really process it as a seven-year-old. Like once I took the time to do that, like I knew something was wrong. Once she got help on the phone with the dispatcher, she was saying something is happening. There was a bunch of words, of course, I didn't really know of. And so I couldn't really pinpoint exactly what was happening. But she was like, at Sandy Hook Elementary, there's something going on. At some point, the loudspeaker came on. And so the bullets, like you could hear them even more because someone hit the loudspeaker button, even though they were trying to call for help. That was a very triggering moment for me because like I remember exactly what they sound like even as an 18-year-old now. I remember when the police came and knocked on the door, we were scared because we weren't sure if it was actually the police or not, and we just had to believe them. And so I remember walking out. I remember we took a left turn instead of going right because that's where the shooting happened and around the corner in my first grade teacher's classroom, Ms. Soto. And I remember taking the left down the hallway, and they're like, put your hand on the person in front of you's shoulder. And that's so what we did. And we went out through the side doors, kind of like in the back of our school. And we walked across the parking lot to the fire station. And I remember we were all sitting there, and I saw like people's faces and parents' faces. And they just looked so distraught and very upset. And I remember sitting there like, what's going on? And I remember when my sister, she found me and tapped me on the shoulder, I just started bawling. And I didn't really know what was going on, but it felt like a relief to just like let everything go when I went to go cry. And I just hugged her, and I found my mama as well.
Of course, I want to start by thanking you for sharing your story because I know how difficult it can be. So thank you. I know that you are still very close with Mrs. Clements, although now as an adult, I'm sure you call her Abby, or maybe not. I don't know. I still can't call my teachers by their first names.
I still say Mrs. Clemens
Do
sometimes.
you? And I know that she not only keeps in touch with you, but a couple of the other students from your class. What is that relationship like now with her all these years later? And like, what has it been like over all of these years?
It's very comforting, especially to know that like you have someone else that went through something so traumatic with you, especially someone who's older and can kind of help you process like what was happening. 'Cause like now my memory of like it happening is like in and out sometimes. So like there's phases where I don't remember anything and there are phases where I do remember everything. There's missing details of like what I went through and stuff like that. So occasionally I have to ask my mom, or like sometimes like I would ask Mrs. Clemens, like, did this happen and stuff like that. It's good to know like I also have someone to like lean on and share like what I'm going through.
You touched on something that I was actually going to ask you about, totally unrelated to your situation. But like when my grandpa passed away, I was almost three. And like, I think most of the memories I have of him are things that other people have told me because I'm so far removed from it now. Like, the actual memories are very fuzzy. So, how much do you remember from that day? And how much of it do you think is what has been told or retold over the years?
I definitely remember being huddled next to my cubby and like seeing all my classmates. I remember looking at them, and a couple of them like felt sick. And I remember like Mrs. Clemens, she like pulled the recycling bin for them to like throw up in. And I remember one distinct memory of when I was there. I remember she took out All the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss to read to us to help us stay calm and quiet. And I remember her doing her best to try and console us. And like, I think I have very distinct memories of like specific things happening, but it depends like on the situation. And there are certain days or months or weeks where I'm like, oh, I remember this. And then I don't remember it like the next month. So it kind of goes like in and out.
You said your sister, was she at school with you too?
No, she's a couple years older than me. So we're 6.5 years apart. So she was actually in middle school. So I think she was in 8th grade at the time, or 9th grade. And she actually stayed home that day. So she was sick. So she was with my mom when they came to rushing to my school. Because at first, in the beginning, they didn't really know what school it was until people started calling. And she realized it was my school. And so then she drove to Sandy Hook. And that's how my sister wanted to go find me. And like, my sister doesn't really talk about it with me or in general, I guess. So like, I don't really know what her perspective is. So I can't really like pinpoint exactly how she felt.
How has being a survivor impacted your family?
I think it made us closer, and I think it changed our perspective on life, especially. Life is short sometimes. I wish it didn't have to be. Basically, live your life to the fullest, and we try to not take a day, guarantee everything. So we try to go day by day and live in the moment rather than living for the future.
How do you approach the topic of gun reform and gun violence? Because I know you've gone to the White House and you've met President Biden, which we'll get into a little bit later. But how do you approach these things, not only as a gun violence survivor, but also as a young woman of color?
For me, it like right now, it's hard sometimes, especially to because I have both sides and the intersection of both of them as well, especially as a young Black woman, and seeing just like the harmful effects of gun violence, especially in communities of color. And to also think that I went through a school shooting, even though I wasn't in a community of color, is very hard to like wrap around, because it's kind of like if Sandy Hook isn't safe, then nowhere else actually is. And I have to realize that I'm trying to do my best to handle both sides no matter what, and also like the laws in certain states and like the differences. Like right now I'm in a college in the South, and I'm on an enclosed campus. They have permitless carry down here, so you can be 21 and up, and you can carry a concealed or opened firearm without having a permit. So it's kind of like nerve racking to also be down here and experience or even hear about more gun violence when I just left a community that was impacted by gun violence.
I totally get it. I live in Florida and it's the Wild West down here. So I I completely understand. And my son, he spent part of this school year in South Carolina playing hockey. And I was nervous for him being in the deep South because we're Jewish. And, you know, I was nervous about that. And I can't even imagine being not only a survivor, but a person of color facing these issues, because I know what it's like as a Jew. But yeah, I don't know. You're a survivor. You're in college. Do you feel safe? Are you nervous to be out in certain places or certain situations?
I definitely don't feel safe. My dorm room is like my safe spot. I'm in a single, so like that's my little home now since I'm away from home. I don't really like leaving campus unless I really have to. The only time I probably leave campus is either for community service or when like my family members come to pick me up. Like I'm comfortable with that. But if I have to go somewhere, like go out for like dinner with friends and stuff like that, and we have to take an Uber, it's a little bit nerve-wracking, especially because I'm like, I don't have a car here. I don't know what to do if I can't escape. And like I've heard stories from like my other friends of like them going to parties and stuff like that, and people having weapons, things like that, and things getting shot up and stuff like that. And so it's kind of like nerve-wracking to wrap my head around because it's like I don't want to go through this again, and I don't think I could.
Do they talk about these things at school? Because I know, unfortunately, there have been shootings on college campuses, and in primary, secondary school setting, you have fire drills and lockdown drills and all of those things. But what do they do in college? Or is this just something that they don't talk about?
They haven't really talked about it because I go to an HBCU and like it's such a small school, but it's also private, where like we've talked to like public safety and just to at least make them aware of my situation. And I told them I don't want this to happen again. HBCUs are also known for like bomb threats and stuff like that. So like we have gone on lockdown because a nearby school received a bomb threat. And so we had to, like, I think we were able to, I can't remember if we had to stay shelter in place or we were able to just walk around our campus with be vigilant. It's kind of hard to like navigate that here, especially when and I'm in a state where you open carry, so anything can really happen. I remember we got an email like just the other day about two students. There was like a road rage incident in the back of another HBCU and they got shot. And I'm like, that shouldn't be happening. And it wouldn't have happened if this state didn't have open carry laws.
I want to talk about your single. Did you request to have a single or did you just luck out?
I requested to have a single.
Is that just easier for you? I would imagine it is.
Yeah, it's just so, I would say it's much easier for me, especially for like my mental health, because loud noises still affect me. And like, I just didn't want to have to deal with like a roommate that I didn't know. And then I'd have to tell them my story and I'd have to keep telling my story. I'm trying not to let it define me because I am a person. I am a human being as well. But like, I know it'll always be a part of me, but I'm also trying to open up a new chapter of my life, especially to take care of my mental health because I didn't really do that growing up. And so now like that's important.
I love what you said that you don't want this to define you, because that's something that I have said to my students from that day for us all along. You know, this is something that happened to us, but this doesn't define us. And since you were so young when it happened, and compared to me, of course, you're young now, you know, to not let this define the rest of your life is a very mature and insightful perspective. How have you taken care of your mental health and taken care of yourself? Because you said for a long time you weren't, it wasn't a priority or you weren't doing it. So how are you prioritizing that now?
I've actually been seeing like a psychologist and counselor. My psychologist is actually up the street from my campus, and then my counselor is on campus. And so I've been taking the time to like actually talk to people about like what I'm feeling and how it has been affecting me, because I haven't really taken the time to actually like sit down and actually process what I went through. I felt like I've always been on go, 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 do this, do that. And it's taken a lot out of me. Now I'm trying to prioritize me and hopefully help myself understand like what I went through, because I was only 7. And like even now I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm 18. I'm like, it felt like it was so long ago that it happened. Sometimes I'm like, I wish it never happened. Like, where would I be now if it didn't happen? I kind of have like those battles sometimes to like really process what I went through. And just to know that I went through something like that is saddening, infuriating as well, because I was only 7. And I don't think any 7-year-old should have gone through what I went through or what my classmates went through. And we should have the ability to feel safe in school.
It's not just that you as 7-year-olds shouldn't have gone through this. No one should have to go through this. And the fact that you did at such a young age isn't just infuriating, it's disgusting and it's horrible. So I'm glad that you're prioritizing yourself and taking care of not only yourself, but your mental health, because anyone who's listened to the show or knows me even for 5 minutes knows what a huge advocate I am of mental health. Having that support system on campus is great. Do you have a support system when you're back home, like over breaks? Okay.
Yeah, my family is like one of my biggest support systems. I'm very open with my parents and my sister, and like I'm very open on my emotions and like what I'm feeling, because they know when I'm feeling down or like not happy about things and stuff like that. So they take the time to listen, which I'm very grateful for.
And you have a good supportive group of friends at school?
I do.
Good. So you have continued to be involved in the gun violence prevention movement. You did a panel with us at Teachers Unify way back in the beginning, right after we formed. I know you've gone to the White House, you've met President Biden. So talk to me about that. Like, what does this movement and involvement look like for you?
I know what I went through, and sometimes there are a lot of people who see, like, especially like Sandy Hook as a hoax and who have claimed it never happened. And it did. I'm here to prove that point, of course. And I want to see change happen, because if I were to have kids in the future, I don't want them to ever go through what I had to go through. It's upsetting in communities of color. Gun violence is also prominent. I want to prevent gun violence as a whole from affecting these communities, and even in schools, doors, just pretty much the public places we found as safe havens are not even safe anymore. It's time for that to change. I believe it can, and with the right people, I think it will.
I remember when people were saying that Sandy Hook was a hoax, because those are the same people who said that after my school. How many times have you been to the White House? Too many to
Like,
count?
my official was this past year, so 2023, I think October or November, September, October, November, when I went for the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. That was like my first official visit, like there, and like sit to like listen to Biden and Kamala. But before that, we went to the building right across, I think Eisenhower, I think it's called, and we were just having meetings of what we wanted to do and what we could do to make a change, because I was part of the Junior Newton Action Alliance when I was in high school, and I just started my senior year being a part of that club and so an organization. And I really wanted to make a difference and to change what I was seeing.
When you spoke with President Biden and Vice President Harris and whatever other members of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, what were some of the things that you told them? Like, were they receptive to listening?
We didn't really see them. We mostly spoke with their staffers, and then there's only one time we spoke with Kamala. I think this was, so I think around the same time this year, but last year we spoke with them. And I think we went to Kamala's office, and she was very welcoming and open, and to just hear about us and like our stories. And she wanted to do what she knew what she could do to help us as well in our community. And then when we went back, we were with Uvalde parents. We discussed creating the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, and we kind of tied it in with FEMA, how they give like support and relief to people who have been in natural disasters. And so that's how we kind of created the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention.
That's great. I spoke with Robert Wilcox, who's one of the deputy directors, and his episode aired recently. And that was one of the points that he made when we spoke. And as I mentioned before we started recording, Vice President Harris was at my school yesterday, and this is going to air in a few weeks. But she met with the families of the victims and sat down and spoke to them and listened to their stories about their loved ones and things that she can do to bring about change. And without getting super political, a Although, again, for anyone who knows me, y'all already know how I feel. I think it's wonderful that President Biden and Vice President Harris are not only open to meeting with and speaking with survivors and victims' families, but they're putting their money where their mouths are. And they created this office and they're talking to people in Parkland and people from Sandy Hook and people from Uvalde and all of these other places to hopefully finally put a stop to all of this gun violence, whether it's school shootings, which are such a small percentage of gun violence, or violence in communities of color, suicide, accidental shootings in the home, like, you know, safe storage is a big thing for the office. And I'm glad that you had a chance to speak with her, not only as a young woman of color, not only as a gun violence survivor, but as the future. You know, now you're old enough to vote. And that's a big thing for the rest of your life to continue to make your voice heard at the ballot box. What is your major?
I'm actually a biology major.
Okay, that is not where I thought this was going to go. All right, what's your big plan?
So I'm on the pre-med track, so I plan to go to med school. And the reason for this is before Sandy Hook, actually, when I was 5 years old, I had emergency open heart surgery. I was born with two heart diseases, which weren't found until I was five. Or I guess they progressed, and then we found out when I was five. And so I needed heart surgery. And so, like, since then, I've always wanted to become a cardiothoracic surgeon. And due to Sandy Hook, I want to specialize in pediatrics.
I'm so sorry. I had no idea that you had heart surgery at five. So I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Joseph Sacrin.
Was he in the interview that we did?
Yes, he was on the panel. Yep, he was on the panel with us. He is a trauma surgeon at Johns Hopkins University, and he is a gun violence survivor himself. Like, that is part of what led him to be a trauma surgeon. So, you know, I hate that you have to connect the dots in this way, but I also love that you are taking the issue that you had as a child with your heart and connecting that to medicine. But not only that, but looking at it from a child survivor perspective and wanting to go into pediatrics. I was never a biology major, although I did like science, but I know that you are going to have a very bright future because knowing you for the short time that I have, you are an incredibly determined young woman and you deserve all of the happiness in the world.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about that maybe I didn't cover?
It just feels like it would happen yesterday, and then now I'm like old enough to like be able to vote. And then it's kind of like, I remember I'm like, I have 2 years until I turn 20, a little under 2 years until I turn 20. But it's like, wow, I feel like I was seven just the other day. And so it's a lot to take in.
It is. I mean, I'm glad that you're able to vote because I've been looking forward to this for my own 18-year-old. And I think I'm more excited about it than he is. But your generation is a generation of school shootings. Like, you have not known a world without that because Columbine happened in 1999 before you were even a thought in your parents' minds.
Yeah.
I was 19, you know?
And my sister was just born when it happened.
Okay.
So yeah.
There you go. So you, as a collective group and generation, only know a world of school shootings. Yep. And the fact that you are all eligible now to vote. And that this issue is so strong on so many people's minds. You collective, because I don't want to speak for you, but you collective are not going to let people stay in office who don't care about children at school and people in communities of color and people who suffer from anti-Semitism and, you know, homophobia and all of these other things that plague us when weapons are involved and even without. So I'm excited that you can vote. I might be more excited than you are. I probably should have been a civics teacher.
Yeah, I'm just hoping people my age go out there to actually vote. It's so important.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow Teachers Unified to End Gun Violence on Instagram and Threads at Teachers Unify. and follow the podcast on both platforms at Teachers Unify PC.